recorded live.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Multiple Streams of Income Radio. We're an innovative talk radio program that focuses on the need for multiple streams of income. With the economy raging like the perfect storm around us, we need multiple ways to protect ourselves and our families from what seems like an inevitable damage. My name is Bernadette Trafton. I am the host of MSI Radio. I'm also the owner and co-founder of the Boston Area Real Estate Investors Association, including the Deals Exchange Network, the Women in Real Estate Network, the Donuts and Deals Seasoned Investors Meeting, BT Real Estate, and SMJ Enterprises, which runs my financial destination business. Obviously, I believe in multiple streams of income. First, I'd like to thank our sponsors, handsfreetext.com. Oprah is telling the country to quit talking about texting while you drive. We all know that people are creatures of habit. So instead of trying to get you to quit, we're offering the solution. Visit handsfreetext.com for more information. Next, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Mr. Nick Aylerud of AA Real Estate. Nick is also a sponsor of our show. Make sure you visit his website, aarealestatepartners.com. Investing in residential and commercial real estate, the service you expect and the returns you deserve. Nick has been investing for a little over 5 years, and he's done some great things. He's a local investor in the Boston area, and I know that I'm learning a ton from him. So, Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm great, Bernadette. Thanks for having me on.
Well, fantastic. Can you do me a favor, Nick? Can you just let the audience know a little bit about your story, what, you know, where you started out and how you ended up doing real estate?
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. It actually started, I was graduated with a politics degree up in New Hampshire, and realizing at the end of my four-year career that no one liked lawyers or politicians, I decided that I'd be going into finance because people liked people who were good with money. I went into investment banking for 3 years, and I decided towards the second year of those 3 years that I did not like, seeing everyone around me, that I'm making everyone else hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, and yet here I am making my 35 grand, and working the 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. shift, or sometimes the 9 p.m. shift, and it was just pretty miserable for me. So I kind of got involved in real estate. I read a book, which many people in our field have read, called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, by Dr. Robert Kiyosaki, and that literally changed my outlook on life, on finances, and how I looked at myself and businesses, and that kind of brought me into investing in real estate and becoming a business owner. It's been a great ride. I'm trying to think. I lost a board game, which is how the real estate game started. I was at my house, and a whole bunch of buddies and I were playing this game, Risk. And I lost, but I couldn't leave because it was my house. So I sat in my chair. It was 2 in the morning, and I turned on the television. And it was the very first late-night infomercial I had ever seen, advertising by real estate, pennies on the dollar. And so I paid $50, and I scrounged together about 6 credit cards to fund my first mentorship program that I funded, and it was, for lack of a better word, some guy out in Texas really couldn't teach me how to do it very well here in Boston, but at least it got me started. And ever since then, I've it's been a great ride. It's been fantastic.
When were you able to walk away from what you were doing as an investment banker?
I did something that a lot of people advise not to do. A lot of people say to build up a residual cash flow before you quit your job so that you can replace your income. I would probably advise on doing that, but I kind of took a shortcut. I just kind of got sick too quickly. So I attempted to get laid off, and I did talk to my boss about seeing if he would lay me off. And he said, Nick, I can't do it. I'd have to submit a page report of telling people why I could substantiate laying you off, and I just can't do it. So I said, well, I really appreciate all the opportunities you've given me, and here's my resignation. So I kind of left prematurely, and I basically said, well, now I got to make this work. I needed to replace that income very quickly. So that's kind of – I did it prematurely. I don't know if I'd advise people to do it that way, but that's kind of how I did it.
Okay. What intrigued you most about real estate? Why did you say, okay, this is what I want to do, and this is why?
I think a lot involves the title of your show, Bernadette. It's real estate itself, to me, coming from a financial perspective in the stock market, the investment itself made me realize how risky stock investing, option investing, you know, all sorts of derivatives, all those things, even if you're very, very good at what you're doing and you're hedging yourself and all that, I still didn't like the fact that I did not have control over what I invested either for other people or for myself. And I did like the fact that I could go and purchase, you know, a house where I could manage the rehab. I knew exactly how much money would go into it, and I knew exactly how to manage and bring an income, create that, make that house an asset that would, you know, present income to me. And in doing that, I could control my investment. I could also touch it. I could insure it. I could loan on it. I could do all sorts of things that it's very tough to do when you're talking stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That was an excellent, yeah.
Now, obviously you're a believer in multiple streams of income, and you've got a lot of different things going on. Can you walk our audience through the different types of business structures that you're involved in, and really why you chose to get involved in those different types of business structures?
Sure. Yeah, that's a loaded question, isn't it? But I got involved in a lot after reading. I got very involved with Kiyosaki, and he kind of shared with me a lot of insight as to my mindset. And after that, it was just about getting educated, learning how to evaluate businesses and how to run businesses, and learning about returns, you know, what would provide me the best return on my money and for the least amount of time that I would spend on it. I did get involved in sort of around the same time that I started investing in real estate. I did know I wanted to purchase another business, more of a, you know, operational business, which I had narrowed it down between two different franchises. One would be Cold Stone's Creamery, and the other was Edible Arrangements. As I was narrowing down the field to choose which one to buy, I did want to kind of get my hands dirty a little bit, you know, understanding the operations management and staffing. And I come from, in the bank, I sort of came from the management background, so I was more comfortable with that. I looked at the numbers between the two, and I kind of narrowed it down and decided Edible Arrangements was going to be my choice. And it just so happened that same day, my mother called and told me, she said, "Nick, I just got my first job in 27 years, but here's the problem. I don't know how to work a computer," and I told the guy I did. "You got to come home right now and teach me how to turn this thing on and how to type and how to email." And so that was the first experience, and I found out she just got her job at the Edible Arrangements in Western Massachusetts. And as it turned out, that was my first business acquisition. I was able to talk to the owner, and for Mother's Day that year, I sort of presented it to her that, you know, "Hey, by the way, we just purchased this business, and congratulations, you can manage it," which turned out to be one of the best and worst decisions of my life. So, oh, gosh. But she loved it. So that was one business, and it's been a very, very big learning experience every single month in that place. I've structured it so that it can run virtually without me, and my mother does help pick up the slack a little bit because that's her passion and her dream. You know, but I continue, whenever she runs into an issue, it usually falls on my desk, and I never know what to expect in the morning on that side. So that's been an excellent business to run. And, of course, I have the real estate investment business, which has been for 5 years, and that's buying and selling residential and commercial property, buying and holding, managing some rental property, structuring lease options, and recently we've gotten involved in coaching students in the Boston area, and that's been a whole new business. So those things require a little bit more of my time, and it's been a blast. That's more of my passion, is, you know, structuring deals and assisting distressed homeowners, and now it's coaching others through their first, second, third, and hopefully 10th deals. That's been an excellent business for me to get involved with. And the last thing, we just started a brokerage company, which is a third stream of income. So that's where we're going to have agents focused mainly on bringing in short sales to the office and income property. And I'm going to show them how to bring those in and how to evaluate them and hopefully help show them how to close on them. If they don't want to close on them, then hell, I'll close on them. So that's another third stream of income for me, and I'm very excited about it. It's going to be a great time.
Awesome, awesome.
Yeah.
Now, which is, I guess your passion, you said, is with real estate, and there's many different streams of income within what you do with real estate. What's your favorite? Working with commercial, residential, what is your favorite?
I think if commercial is probably my favorite now, but it's despite what a lot of gurus say out there, it's actually it's easy to get involved with, but it's easier for me, and it was easier for me to get involved on a residential level first, which is buying and holding rental property is probably my favorite way to show people how they can eliminate all their debt, and also have some great tax deductions come in their way, and that's sort of like my passion, analyzing those types of rental properties, 3, 4, 5, 6 unit properties, and just showing people how to maximize their income and minimize their expenses. You know, it's an exciting field, and there's certainly, I have a list of every single excuse I've ever heard from a tenant on rent being late, which it's sort of a fun field because, again, you never really know what to expect, but it's a fun business. You know, rental or non.
Okay. Now, can people work with you if they are in a situation where maybe they don't want to get their hands dirty, so to speak?
Oh, sure. You mean that they don't want to actively get in there and start hiring tenants and cleaning up properties and that sort of thing?
Correct.
Sure, absolutely. We certainly offer a lot of those opportunities, and I guess that was the opportunity for me to plug that, Bernadette, and I appreciate it. We have a multitude of investment opportunities available for those people who don't want to be active investors. They just want to kind of put their money to work. And I'd be happy to meet with people and kind of go over their financial goals and see if we have anything. We have short-term investments, and we have longer-term investments, and they're all it's all about kind of educating people as to the benefits of real estate, and we are able to use IRA money at this point. We structure it so that we are able to roll their IRA money right to a custodian that allows them to invest in real estate and in private placements and in judgments and things like that, which a lot of people don't know exist. As a financial planner, I'll tell you, I was not able to tell people those existed because I was never taught them about them. So it's a great field. I'd love to work with people, and if they're interested, definitely, they can come and contact me.
Okay, awesome. Now, what do you think for our newer investors out there, and there's a lot of newer investors, what do you think is the biggest misconception that people have about real estate investing?
The biggest misconception? Well, I'll say that the biggest misconception I've run into is that people think it's a get-rich-quick game, including myself when I started. That infomercial, man, I'll tell you, that guy in the infomercial with the big yacht on TV, he sure made it look a lot easier than it really was. So I think they're kind of spelling out the image for the rest of the world. But in reality, for me, it's been an awful, especially if you can come to the table in this game, and you can either bring cash, you can bring credit, or you don't have to bring either, But if you don't bring either of those, you have to expect to learn either how to leverage other people's time or to spend some of your own time on your business. And as long as you bring one of those three or four things to the table, it is going to be a lot of work up front. But you can certainly succeed in this business, even if you don't have cash or credit when you start. Just be prepared to put an awful lot of time into finding deals, into finding buyers, into structuring deals and making things work for you. Setting up a business is an awful lot of work no matter what business it is. And I think that's where people really have to kind of wake up and say, can I structure 5 to 10 hours a week on this business? Which really is all it takes. But when people, even when they think about it on a piece of paper, it doesn't seem like a lot. But when you're sitting there after a long 12-hour day at work, and trust me, because I know, and at 7 p.m., you find yourself in front of your computer screen, and you have to go at least one or two more hours. am I happy I did it? Absolutely. But people have to be committed. They have to understand why they're doing what they're doing. And if they don't like where they are now, they have to change their mindset to get to be where they want to be in 5 years. And they make that change right now. That's where I believe.
What are the specific questions that newer investors should ask themselves when they're deciding A, whether or not they're going to go into real estate, questions that they should maybe ask themselves and ask other newer investors, other seasoned investors? What type of questions?
What type of questions? That's a good one. The first thing that I might be able to share is real estate is not necessarily a sticks and bricks kind of business. It's not where you can, you will be running into properties at some point and analyzing them and finding out if they make sense from a rehab perspective. But real estate, even when you begin, is all about, it's a people business. So if you're an introverted person, if you're very, very shy, if you don't like getting up in front of people, that's okay. But they should make the change right now to start getting out there, to start making some phone calls, getting out of their comfort zone and talking in front of people. If they feel like they want to be an introvert the rest of their life, then maybe real estate wouldn't be a good choice for them. As far as asking other seasoned investors, I'd say a great question that I used to ask was, what got you started and how did your, what was your first deal? What kind of went through your head when you executed and pulled that trigger on your very first deal? Was it a rehab? Was it a wholesale deal? Was it a lease option? What was that? And how did you feel when you finally signed that contract and put yourself out there? I love that question because that really motivated me at the beginning when I was sort of scared to pull the trigger and I was, going to every single class and mentorship thing I could and still wasn't able to get that first deal done. So that was always a good question for me. And then once you done a few deals yourself, my questions that I still ask people are, how are you systemizing your business? How are you getting out of your business so that you're not always the one spending all of your time going, evaluating deals and putting offers in and meeting with homeowners? And, that's where I'm at now. So I'd say maybe progression of those two questions, Bernadette, might help some newer investors.
Can you answer those two questions for the newer investors who are on the line?
Sure. As far as what my first deal was all about, you mean?
Yes.
Okay. A lot of people, at least in the Boston area, I think a few people know my story. I actually started a very, very rough start to my business. I was still at the bank, and Bernadette, I think you might even know the story because I told this at one of your RIA meetings, but I was, back when I used to have hair, I used to look at a shampoo bottle, and this might be censored over the air, but you can censor this, Bernadette, and just beep over the image of me being in the shower looking at a shampoo bottle, okay?
Okay.
but I remember looking at that shampoo bottle and thinking to myself, I am so sick of just going online and reading in forums and posting, and, I got to get out there and do a deal. And I said, by the time that shampoo bottle is finished, I'm going to get my first deal done. And I did. I held myself to it. And I was very successful. I was successful in getting my deals done. I did find some people in the Boston area that were making some money with a gentleman out of state. He was using credit partners, and he was teaching us all about how to lease option properties. And he was the manager. He found the buyers. He found the deals and structured them. He did everything. All he needed was a credit partner. So in a bad and a good experience for me, I signed on with him after doing some background checks, and as soon as I closed not one but my first five deals with that gentleman, he kind of left the state, and everyone here in Boston, no one knew where he went. So my very first five deals in real estate actually were very poor. I ended up having to short sale three of my own properties back to the bank, or to 10 buyers, and two of them I had approved short sales, but because of the lack of organization on the bank, they ended up going to foreclosure. So my 790 credit score soon plummeted to a number that I haven't looked at since. but I guess that's the answer to my first deal question. But, you have to look at yourself. And was I in denial for a while and thinking that real estate, I made this awful mistake and it wasn't for me? Absolutely. But there came another time, about 4 or 5 months after the whole ordeal passed, where I said, you know what, this is it. This is really how to make it, and this is how I'm going to pay off all my debt. I'm going to get back on my feet, and I don't need cash or credit. All I need is my head on my shoulders and my ability to learn how to talk with people. And it's exactly what happened, and that's what I did. Coming back from that, I tell anybody, you can start from any position in this business, and you can come back tenfold. It's an amazing, amazing business that I'm very passionate about. So that was the first question. Did that answer that question?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And the systems question is a little bit more involved. But once people start to get into the hang of, you know, making offers on property and analyzing deals and structuring deals, it's the best thing that I've done, and I'm still doing, and I'm learning every day about it, is I'm learning how to leverage other people to help me grow my business. And in doing that, they get rewarded for that. They have a piece of my business. So if I need someone to help me analyze deals, I put together systems. And those systems, I am able to just, they've documented, and I can hand them right over to somebody that I want to train. And I say, here, follow this step-by-step book. And I learned that at the bank, too. You know, that's how we train people at the bank. Here's a step-by-step procedural book that you take somebody off the street, they'll be able to read those steps and be able to follow them, and that part of the business will then be systemized. And I try to do that in everything that I do now. You know, I have marketing systems, I have investor systems, I have rehabbing systems. That's the best advice I could probably give to somebody who's at that point. Once they've done 5 or 6 deals, or maybe 10 or 12 deals, you know, they want to start leveraging other people's time more than they, so that they can spend time finding deals and structuring their business in the most beneficial way to them.
Fantastic, fantastic. Now, over the past few years, what do you think has helped you most in your career as a real estate investor?
I'd say the thing that kept me on track when I was either going through the times before my first deal or after my first, you know, few unsuccessful deals, what kept me on track was surrounding myself. And this sounds very cliche, but you know what? It's so true. Like, I just wrote a blog entry about it. Surrounding yourself with other successful people, whether they're successful in that they've done 1,000 deals or they're successful in that they're right where you are. They haven't done a deal yet, but their mindset is right on. They're saying, you know, I'm going to get that deal this week, and this is how I'm going to do it. Those people, I found an awful lot of those people at real estate investment associations, which I think you're very intimate with, Bernadette, especially the Boston area in Waltham.
Right.
I helped plug something, see? But no, I would certain to everyone listening to this conversation, if you're remotely interested in investing in real estate, you have to surround yourself with like-minded people. You know, my friends gave me hell when I started getting into this business. Oh, look at Nick. He bought that infomercial. He's going to be on the yacht in 10 years, you know, is telling everybody and selling all this stuff. And, you know, I took a lot of it from my friends. And they're great guys. I still hang out with a lot of them. But, you know, my success in this business was not due to them. It was due to those people who I surrounded myself with, who I wanted to hang out with and talk about how to structure deals with. This isn't working for me. What's working for you? RIAs are fantastic ways to meet those people. And they're fantastic ways to network and to build those contacts so that maybe even when that deal comes that you can't do, you can still send that to those contacts that you've made and maybe even still make a referral fee on that. You know, that would be excellent. They're great contacts to make, and that's why I continue to go every single month to as many as I can.
Fantastic. Now, when did you, after, you know, going through your initial struggles, when were you able to say, aha, and when were you able to breathe again that this is going to be your full-time gig, because you did walk away from your job, right, at that point?
Right. I walked away from my job a little prematurely. It was after I had gone through all those the bad ordeal, and I finally, you know what really happened is I had brought in my first investor, and I'll never forget, I was sitting there, and again, I'm working 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. most days. Now, I'll never forget, my investor left me 3 voicemails because he obviously wanted to talk to me very urgently about the deal that we were doing. And I'll never forget thinking to myself, what am I going to do? Call him back and say, I can't talk to you till 8 because I'm at my full-time job. But getting back on the horse was, I actually did go to another seminar that helped me get back in the game, Bernadette. And that was, his name is Marshall Silver. Some people might have heard of him. He is a world-renowned hypnotist, kind of based out of Vegas. He's an entertainer, but now he's also a motivational speaker. And he kind of helped me realize, no matter what happens that's poor in your life, you can turn anything around into a learning experience. And once you look at it that way, and once you have that master program within yourself to say, hey, I don't have to be all of my experiences put together up to this point. As of this one moment, this one second, I can be whoever I want to be. And I guess at that moment, after all of the foreclosures and the short sales, I kind of turned around and thought that to myself, saying, listen, I don't have to be the result of the actions and things that I've done before. As of right now, I'm a brand new person. I'm going to make my own decisions, and I'm going to get out there and succeed. And that's literally all it took was a why factor. Why do I want to succeed? Well, I want to provide for myself and for my family someday. I want to be able to have my kids go to school and not have to worry about college bills. But at the same level, I'm going to still make them pay for it because I think that they should learn the value of a dollar. So, it's kind of it's a why factor for me. It was getting back on my feet, and it was also a mixture of realizing that I just couldn't run the business as effectively if I were still at the bank. And that's when I decided I needed to make that decision to leave.
Actually, that's fantastic. What I meant was, since that time, when were you able to say, okay, I'm successful, and how did you measure that?
I would hardly say that I'm successful, Bernadette. I mean, I've done very well, and it's been a great business for me, but I'm on track for to retire and to be completely, I'm already independent, I suppose, but I want to be, I am job optional, but I want to retire and do whatever I want to do by the time I'm 35. So I'm on track for that, and I guess that's where I'm going to measure my success is every year until I hit there. But as far as, I knew that I guess when I started doing my next five deals after those five bad ones, and when I started realizing that I can structure these deals, I can run these numbers, everything I learned, as long as I put it to practice, it does work. And it's not that, it's just about the fear of pulling that trigger again. So once I got over that fear, and once I did I started doing lease options again, I started doing some condo conversions that year, I partnered with people so I didn't have to use my own credit. I partnered with some business partners that I had actually met in a RIA meeting. And that using those connections, those relationships, and the knowledge that I already had, and the ability to pull the trigger, I guess that's when all those things fell into place for me. And I started just hitting one deal after another. And I guess your self-esteem sort of rebuilds at that point when you start being successful with it, saying, I knew this would work. I knew this was the way to do it. And you just kind of keep going. You make it a system. You say, all right, I did two deals in the last 6 months. I'm going to do five in the next 6 months. And how do I do that? Well, it means I have to submit more offers. I have to, get out there and create two more win-win partnerships. I have to get out there and just really kind of pound the ground, make sure that my time is best spent. But that's kind of – does that answer your question, or was that vague too?
No. That answers my question. So for our listeners, when you're 35 – how much money do you need to be making residually in order to retire?
I'm on track, and I would like to make about $50,000 a month residually by 35. I'm probably going to retire as far as active investing at that point and move more into the passive investing where, I may be lending my money out to other active investors, and I would be, maybe writing books at that point. I'm very passionate. I learned about teaching other people, and I don't think I'll ever quit that. But that's kind of where my end goal is about $50,000 a month, and I'm on track, so I'm very excited about it.
What do you think you could say to newer investors who can, maybe they're getting, they can wrap their brain around $50,000 a year, but they might not think it's possible to earn $50,000 a month?
I'll tell you, I certainly didn't. We're making 35 grand at the bank.
Right.
I would tell them that it's real estate, like any business, is a complete numbers game. And as a lot of gurus will tell them, $5,000 a month and $50,000 a month is literally, it's just an extra zero. It's nothing more than working your numbers and doing the math and getting an extra zero a month and for doing the same amount of work. You know, you're just playing in a bigger field now. You're playing with bigger numbers, but it's the same exact deals. You're still analyzing the same deals. You're still structuring the same win-win situations, and you're still getting out there pounding the ground and making it work.
Right.
So that's, I guess, it's tough for me. I'm thinking back, and it was a lot tougher for me, too, to think about that, four years ago. But now seeing, you know, as soon as they get on track, they have to break it down year by year, break it down month by month, break it down week by week. What do I have to do this week to meet my month goal? And your
mm-hmm.
month goal should lead you right into your yearly goal, and your yearly goal should lead you into your five-year plan.
Right, right. I usually go backwards. I start with the five-year plan, go back to a year. What am I going to need to do every year? And then monthly, and then even break it down weekly.
That's exactly right.
One of my favorite speakers who recently passed away, Jim Rohn, said, make up in numbers what you lack in skill. So
that's a great one. Yeah. Absolutely.
So,
I like that.
So just keep, you know, pushing forward, and if you want to make the 50,000, you just have to keep, you have to do more, right?
Absolutely. It's all about, yeah, exactly, hard work. Hard work can get you there. And like you mentioned, Bernadette, starting at your five-year plan is very, very important. And what I tell my students now when I work with them, one of their first steps is I make them write out how their day looks 5 years from today. I want them to write out from when they wake up to when they go to bed at night. What are they doing? Are they waking up? You know, even I want senses. I want them when they walk into their, you know, what is it, 20-square-foot bathroom, you know, with the shower that hits them from all angles and stuff like that. I love that stuff. That's what, you know, and I get pictures, and the more detailed they are in that that one-day plan that they make for themselves, we start right there. How do we get you into that house? How do we get you driving that car? How, you know, is it a money? Is it personal? Like, if it's money, all money is a math game, and we can get you there. You know, it's they use real estate, use passive income sources, use businesses to drive you to where you want to be in 5 years. But the trick is, you are the only people responsible for meeting that 5-year goal are the people themselves. It's
mm-hmm.
their hard work, it's their commitment. You know, and that's where people have to understand. Yeah, just you're not hitting your numbers this month. Maybe you have to put out another 100 offers, and maybe that's going to require another 400 properties. But if that's where you want to be in 5 years, then you can do it. But you got to put down the work to get you there. So it's awesome. I love it.
Right. Now, when you're working with students that you have, if they ask you, hey, Nick, where's the easiest place for me to start? What area of real estate do you point people towards?
It depends on their resources, Bernadette, but I think most of the people who come to me have limited cash or credit resources. The easiest way for them to start would be usually to wholesale. Wholesaling strategy in real estate is one of the lowest risk strategies and requires really very, very minimal amounts of money and no credit, depending on your strategies. But it's basically, it's all about the strength of the person. It's all about marketing. You have to market for deals, you have to market for buyers, and the wholesaler puts them together and makes a fee for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I lead people when they first start out if they have limited resources.
Now, do you point them in a specific area, or do you ask them where they want, or do you base it on where they live, or how do you help them decide?
Usually it's around... if they're newer without a lot of resources, we usually try to structure it right within 5 or 10 miles of their house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what wholesale sources do you have within 5 or 10 miles of your house? Do you have pre-foreclosures? Do you have divorce? Do you have probate? Do you have bankruptcy? You know, do you have attorneys around you? What relationships do you have with people now? Do you have mortgage brokers on your team? Do you have a CPA on your team that can help fund, you know, send you deals? Who do you have that can start sending you deals? And then what are you doing to help bring in buyers so that you have buyers for these deals? So we usually have them pick one or two of those niches and have them just, you know, attack that with the marketing to try to get out there and try to bring in some deals to them, you know?
What type of marketing? I mean, are we talking bandit signs, direct mail?
Sure, we can – I didn't know how much time we had, but we can go into wholesaling. Marketing for deals is there's many, many ways to do it. Bandit signs are one way. A lot of people have seen those I buy houses around. There's online advertising through Craigslist or LinkedIn. There is one of the best ways to do it is just to you should, you know, someone has to brand themselves as I am the real estate problem solver in my community. You know,
right.
Putting up flyers in grocery stores, putting them up at hardware stores. You know, I solve real estate problems. Give me a call. That's kind of where they have to brand themselves within their community to start bringing in deals. And buyers is the same way. You know, you just brand yourself differently. You know, hey, I'm a real estate investor. I have an awful lot of deals that come to my desk. I usually sell them, you know, between 60 and 70% of market value. You know, I usually need cash buyers. They need to be able to close quickly. Are you interested? Are you that person? You know, let's talk. Where do you meet those people? Well, I met a lot of them at the RIA meetings. In fact, you have a actual segment within your RIA meeting, Bernadette, that's a buy and sell segment. Is that correct?
Correct, in all of them, yes.
Absolutely. So you find a lot of buyers and sellers right at those RIA meetings, and that's a great way to find deals and to negotiate back and forth and to get paid on them.
Do you suggest that people call other iBuyHouses guys?
Absolutely. Every single wholesaler out there is not competition, but they're a partner of every other wholesaler. If someone has a deal and they send it to their buyer's list and not one person is interested in buying it, well, that person can either do one of two things. They can back out of the deal and you know, leave the homeowner to fend for themselves, or maybe they can partner with one another wholesaler, send them to other wholesalers in the area, say, hey, guys, can you guys market these to your buyer's list? If anyone sells this deal, I'll pay you $1,000. And that's what I buy houses signs are. If they're wholesalers, or they could be rehabbers. Rehabber is your direct buyer, and if it's just another wholesaler, well, don't look at them as competition. You know, you put them to work for you. Put them as a partner in your database so that when you get that deal, they can help you sell it. You know, or maybe you come across a deal you don't know how to structure it. They can help you structure that deal, and you guys can partner on it together.
Okay. Now, what type of resources would someone need to, say, invest in multifamily homes?
In multifamily, if it's four units or under, Bernadette, that's considered a residential building. And if they're doing it, it depends on whether they're going to be living there or if they're buying it for investment. But people, if they're going to be living in the unit as well as renting it out, there's now FHA loans out there that'll get them in as long as they have, you know, relatively good credit at, 3.5% down. That's for a, you know, four unit or under. If they're looking at between five or six units and up for commercial rentals, that's usually a little bit more. They have to bring some cash to the table, usually between 20 and 30% down. They have to have decent credit. And they have to make sure, the biggest thing that they look at that point is if the property cash flows and also the credibility of the person buying it. So does the property work? What kind of numbers is it putting off? And the person buying it, do they have significant management experience? Is there a reason that I'm a bank? You know, if I'm looking at it, is there a reason to believe that this thing will default because the person who's buying it has no idea and has never owned rental real estate before? They are actually looking at that these days. So if they look at that and someone's interested in buying a 20-unit building but maybe doesn't have that experience, that doesn't mean that person can't pull in somebody who has that experience and maybe partner on the deal with them, have them be the credibility partner. You know, that happens a lot in this game. So there's resources. If it's rental property, you can certainly get into them with no money and no credit, and there's many, many creative ways to do it out there. But if you're looking at it just from a straight, you know, I want to get in, I want to have a safe deal, you know, I don't want to do any creative stuff, then you're usually looking between, you know, 3.5% to 10% down on a residential and between 20% and 30% down on a commercial deal. And you need some pretty good credit, some pretty good partnerships for credibility.
Okay. Now, would you suggest that someone start out, say they have, you know, they have, I don't know, they've been paying their home, it's completely completely paid off. They've got hundreds of thousands of dollars in equity. They see what's going on in the market. They feel like they should get involved. Would you have them focus on residential, or would you have them focus on commercial?
I would first meet with them, Bernadette, and discuss with them, just like a financial planner would, where their thoughts are, where's their mindset, because there's a lot of people out there. If they're open to it, I would certainly push them towards commercial. Commercial, to me, is a little bit lower risk and has much better economies of scale than residential real estate. But it really depends on their comfort level. If they want to start out small, I have a gentleman right now with, you know, a few hundred in the bank and is looking to get into rentals, but he doesn't want to go over 5 units. You know, he wants to start in his backyard. He wants to pick up as many 5-unit buildings as he can, and only once he's picked up a certain amount, when he's comfortable with that, will he roll all that into a bigger commercial building. So it really depends on their mindset, but I would suggest maybe if people do go larger, they will find that their economies of scale does enhance significantly once they start going into larger properties. But it's not any less management. Don't let anybody think it is. You're still managing the manager like you wouldn't believe every single day. You got to have someone dedicated to calling them and making sure that they're on the ball every single day of every single week.
Now, how do newer investors avoid getting taken, if you will? I have some newer investors who've had some, I don't know, they've had really tough situations where they've lost hundreds of thousands of dollars with unscrupulous people who are now in jail, thankfully. But how would they have avoided getting into a situation like that? What are their protections?
That's a loaded question to ask me, Bernadette, knowing my first partnership went badly, but...
Well...
You know, you're right. It's a very, very good question to ask. When I meet with investors, I want to make sure, well, let's say I'm the investor meeting with me. I'm going to make very sure that, first of all, who is this guy? Where does he come from? You know, I want to see testimonials, and the best thing that I could do is maybe do some background checks, like reference checks on him. Do you work with any other investors now? You know, would you be willing to provide one or two of their names, or have they allowed you to provide them their names and phone numbers for a reference check to see, you know, how things are going with them? A lot of times it's about it's a very interesting question you ask. See, I thought I did that with the first time around, and it turns out that no matter how scrupulous you are, you can't really get mad at yourself too badly if you do get taken, because unfortunately there are so many of those people out there. But the best thing I can do is maybe, you know, do those reference checks. Make sure there's a level of communication even before your first meeting with that person where, you know, the person shouldn't be late to a meeting. The person should get back to you as soon as you call them. They should, you know, maybe be relatively available over email. All those, if any one of those, there's a warning flag that goes up usually if you can't get a hold of somebody within a reasonable amount of time. You know, I don't like working with people like that at all. But, you know, I'd have to think about that even more, Bernadette, because I'm sure there's a lot more people out there. You know, I put together a professional presentation when I meet with investors, and it has testimonials in it. It has the current investment opportunities. It has who I am and where I came from. And I am very honest with people when I talk about those first, you know, 5 bad deals. You know, I think that I bring a lot to the table that way because that helped me become a lot more conservative in the way I do things. So I think I have to think about that more, you know, and redress
it. Would involvement from, I don't know, a lawyer, would that, a trusted lawyer, would that help? Or
you on the investor's side?
Yes. On the newer investor's side, the one that, you know, is risking maybe they're you know, the particular case that I'm talking about, the gentleman had, you know, $150,000, and there was an actual property. It was in Dorchester, but the way everything was written up it was a situation where he ended up losing all of his money, and now he's got a property that, you know, he can't rent. And the people, he actually went to court, and they ended up going to jail, which is fantastic. But if there would be a way to, you know,
it doesn't
maybe
help
prevent
him
something like, yeah,
right, exactly, yeah. One of the first people that people should put on their power team, whether they're an investor, a passive investor, an active investor, whoever they are, even if they're just a business owner or they want to become a business owner, very first person to put on their power team is a very good attorney. Not just an attorney, but either an investor-friendly attorney or a business attorney that's very in tune with, you know, analyzing businesses, with maybe structuring those partnerships, those deals, so that if something like that were to come across their desk, they could immediately pull out all the red flags and say, hey, just to let you know, you're into this deal, that's great, but, you know, keep this in mind. You know, make sure you check this out, and that, you know, if this guy doesn't do this, you're going to have the property, and maybe you're going to, you know, lose $150,000 while you're doing it. And an attorney should hopefully pick that out for people.
Okay.
A good one.
Okay. All right. Now, we're getting near the end of the show. If you had three golden nuggets of advice that you could give to newer investors, what would they be?
Ooh, wow. That's a great question. Three golden nuggets of advice. I think the first one is to write out goals. Like we talked about earlier, it's great if you can start with your five-year goal, your five-year plan, and you back into that. You start with that five-year vision, and every single year, and don't make it January 1st, because, you know, 90% of resolutions fail. So I always do it January 6th or the 7th. That way it's not a New Year's resolution, and it's not going to fail. And
right.
I write out every single plan of what I have to do monthly, and every 6 months I revisit that to make sure that I'm right on target. But there's a magical thing, Bernadette, and I think you and I both agree on this. When people write things down, it does something within their head. It does something more than just saying, you know what, this year I'm going to close on 10 deals. If you say, you write it down this year, you know, by December I will have closed on 10 deals, and then you write down your monthly plan saying, okay, that means that I have to close on, you know, one deal a month about, and that means I have to write out this many offers and I have to analyze this many deals, that's the first big nugget that I could give people, is to write out their goals. The second one is, a lot of people say this differently, jump off the cliff and your wings will follow. If you are never the person that, if you're so afraid to take that first step, then you're never, ever, ever going to make money in this business because you're going to be too afraid. You can be the most educated person in the world, attend every seminar, go with every mentor, read everything online, and even post in forums. But until you take that first step and close that first deal, which is, by the way, that's where you're going to learn the most, is when you're actually in this business. It won't do anything for you. You need to learn and trust in your team and trust in yourself. Once you see a deal that works, to act on it. Take that action, because that's where it's going to be. And let's see, a third. God, Bernadette, that's putting a lot on me here. the third, I would say, no matter what business they're in, one of the biggest advantages that I learned is a lot of people are shocked when they find out that before I got into this business, even when I was a politics major, I was very, very, very shy. In front of people, if you put me up in front of a group of like 100 people and I couldn't see them, I'm great. But if you put me in a group with like 5 or 6 people or even one-on-one, I would lock up and I would not understand. I couldn't speak. I didn't know what to say and I got very, very nervous. If you focus continually on your weaknesses in any business you do, I think that's a huge advantage to anybody. And in my case, one of my weaknesses was kind of social awkwardness when it came down to one-on-ones or small groups. And by learning to work through that, I learned to make some incredible win-win partnerships and put some great deals together that really launched me towards my success. And I suggest everyone here do the same, to work on their weaknesses. Identify them. Don't be afraid to admit to them and then to turn that around as a learning experience and work on them.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today. I really appreciate everything that you talked about. I appreciate everything that we're working on and everything that we do towards trying to help newer investors and help people create multiple streams of income. So thank you so much for being on our call, Nick.
Had a great time, Bernadette. Thanks very much.
Okay. Well, everyone, make sure you get on our show next week, and we're going to be talking short sales next week. Again, I'd like to thank our sponsors. First, we have handsfreetext.com. Again, Oprah is telling everyone across the country to quit talking and create a no-phone zone in their car. You know what, guys? We're creatures of habit, and most of the people that I know make 50% of their money in their car. They're not going to quit. So instead of telling you to quit, we're offering the solution. Make sure you visit handsfreetext.com. And, of course, Nick is one of our sponsors, Nick Aylerud, AA Real Estate. Make sure you visit him at aarealestatepartners.com. Investing in residential and commercial real estate, offering the service you expect and the returns you deserve. And make sure that you keep your eyes open for Nick's new realtor office and everything that he's going to be. I know he's going to be focusing on working with real estate investors and helping them get the returns that they want. So everybody have a great week, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.